Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, Ramblers, and welcome to a little revisit of our series At The Match, which we made to bring you the atmosphere from some of the UK and Europe's most interesting grounds and games, which for obvious reasons, while we're mostly indoors, I've been really enjoying re-listening to of late and resampling the roar of the crowd. This is the first ever episode we did when me and photographer Sam hopped in the car and headed homeward bound, for him anyway, down the M4 to Cardiff, where Wales were taking on Spain at the Millennium. And straight away, we get to that sweet spot that we're trying to bring you. The bit where you hear the rendition of Land of Our Fathers from the top of the game through your headphones is really special. And then we get into the burgeoning relationship between Wales and its national team, why bigger isn't always better in terms of stadiums, and much more. This is At The Match from Wales versus Spain on 11th of October 2018.
Well, I can see the stadium just through those houses there. It really is right in the middle of the city centre, isn't it?
It is right there. It's a good turnout, though.
Yeah, it's busy, isn't it? Busy.
Daffodils as far as the eye can see.
Or a daff hat or a half and half scarf? What do you reckon?
Always a daff hat.
And now we are us, and it's Tanad and Gwyn Anthem Cymru. Please remain standing for the National Anthem of Wales. Y Wal Goch, Canwch ac Angen, Bloeddiwch a Balchder, the Red Wall, sing it loud and proud.
So the last time I came to a game at the Millennium Stadium, as I still insist on calling it, I worked out it was in summer 2007. Wales were playing Czech Republic. it was probably about one third full, I would say. And having gone back and looked it up to make sure I had the right date, the right year even, I was amazed to see it was Ryan Giggs' last international match. Now he is here as a coach. How much has changed in the meantime?
A huge amount has changed, actually. I mean, Bale was playing that day, from what I remember. He'd made his debut the year before. There had to be a complete sort of revolution from top to bottom of football. Mark Hughes. People will identify success at the Millennium Stadium, and there were some big results beating Italy there under Mark Hughes. But he had this approach. It was his first managerial job of any sort, and he had this approach. A great player. I mean, I'm not knocking him as a player for Wales or for his clubs, but he was only interested in that senior men's team. Everything else, pretty much disinterested. So there was no pathway, and
sort of like a coach like a Mourinho who goes out and buys players for now.
Yeah. Or, you know, some kind of, I don't know, wealthy but limited nation that just gets in, you know, a gun for hire. You know, some like the African countries fire their coach when they get to a World Cup and they get some French guy in, you know.
Yeah, Sven Göran Eriksson in an orange tracksuit.
Yeah, Bora Milutinovic.
We'll get on board with that.
Yeah. and for a short while it worked. But belief back into the team. There was some talent in that team. You know, Bellamy, Giggs. You know, Hartson was a great sort of centre forward in the system that Hughes played. You had class in the back in the form of sort of Daniel Gabaldon. But by and large, that was all the focus for Hughes. And when he finished, a lot of those players, Speed, Savage, Hartson, Giggs, Pembridge, Melville, you name them, Rob Page, a lot, even ones on the fringes, were too old. And best days were behind them. And, you know, we had very, very little coming through. So what we've got now, and you've seen the fruits of it with the Euros, should have qualified for the World Cup, and that was a failure, no two bones about it. What we've got now is this pathway. So we talk about this pathway from top to bottom, from young to senior, that is around a certain philosophy. It's about an identity. It's about culture, not just on the pitch, but off.
In what way?
So players who've who qualify via sort of grandparents, for example. So Andy King came on the day.
That could have been me.
I didn't even get picked under Toshack. So you'd have got, very few people didn't get picked under him. It was really kind of scraping a barrel stuff at times. And to be fair, a lot of those kids, we covered this in our last podcast. We were talking about, you know, we're playing Spain today, we played France last year, you know, top sort of countries who tend to as well keep those friendlies to themselves. Mm. Yeah. And with the advent of the Nations League, I think it's interesting now what's going to happen with the few remaining genuine friendly dates as to what happens with those fixtures, those slots. But we were playing like Liechtenstein and Wrexham and, you know, Cyprus away and New Zealand at home and real kind of, you know, average countries, to put it politely, because the players were so young. I mean, literally so young, 16, 17, 18. They just weren't playing games for the club, let alone for country. So we just used to arrange these friendlies and was hoping that we wouldn't get a complete pump in, because, you know, that would sort of really kind of damage confidence. And there were some players whose confidence just utterly disappeared. So Richard Duffy left Swansea, big money went to Portsmouth. You know, Reece Weston left Arsenal, joined Cardiff, and really struggled to get caps after just confidence just like disappearing. So there was a lot of collateral. He just tried to play lots and lots of players, and eventually kind of was getting somewhere. But it never really happened for Toshack in the end. And, you know, it's an issue that even now kind of splits the fan base. But he did insist on unifying the intermediate level from age grade. So he put Brian Flynn in charge of all of the under 21s, yeah, under 17s, right down to kind of Victory Shield 16s, 15s, and said, you just give me players. And what was interesting was when you used to have maybe Ian Rush at, you know, in charge of under 17s, someone else in charge of 18s or 19s, under 21s, they're holding on to the best players that age group because they want the results, because it's a results game, isn't it? Results business. Well, for Wales, it shouldn't be. It's got to be about developing talent.
Well, it shouldn't be for any international team, really.
And it certainly shouldn't be for us. And I still maintain that, you know, if Giggs rocks up for work on Monday morning with a squad to pick that week, how many professional players has Wales got to offer him? Mm. I mean, players who, you know, they that is their job. And when you whittle out the 16 and the 17 year olds on YTS things, and you whittle out the players still knocking around at 34, 35 in League Two, once you whittle those out, once you whittle out the full time pros, the Welsh players at the New Saints, you know, or Connors Quay, I absolutely maintain that we must have 80 professional players to choose from.
The ball is mine, the ball is me. Right now, number 9, Paco Alcacer.
What about more off the pitch? What about in terms of atmosphere? I mean, what is 7.5 years since Wales last played at the Millennium Stadium? It seemed really difficult. It reminded me a bit of Spurs at Wembley, actually, when they filled it up with 90,000 and a few tourists. I mean, you had like 50,000 there tonight at the Millennium to watch Spain. And I find with that sort of level of stadium, it's quite difficult to hit a high point with the atmosphere and keep it up. And I really felt that was the case tonight. I mean, you could say there was no Bale. You could say Wales went 1-0 down after 7 minutes, and that made it tough. But how difficult is it to maintain the atmosphere? And how much did that show that playing the games at Cardiff City is the smart way to go?
I think it was a perfect example of why that has become, you know, the designated, if you like, home ground for Wales. And you don't forget, you know, as well with Wales, there's been that Cardiff City, Swansea City rivalry, Cardiff City other teams, frankly. You know, that's not long been consigned to history, that infighting. When you used to take games to the Vet, you take them to Ninia and you take them up to the Racecourse, which historically was actually Wales' most successful ground. It's still to this day is the ground we've played most games in.
Is that right?
Yeah. So, albeit we've played more games in Cardiff, but across different grounds, but a single stadium. It's the oldest international stadium in the world. So, if we're going to take a game anywhere, my personal view would be to take it there. Now, it's not up to scratch for international games, apparently, and it's all a little bit obscure as to what would need to be done to get it there.
But just from a traditionalist perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, but also because, you know, of that 50,000, well, there's a few tourists, but you take a 35,000 then, more or less capacity crowd, a bit more than that, at Cardiff City. There's a disproportionate amount coming from North Wales. Yeah, and that's all. Right. There's always been a very strong, hardcore representation contingent from North Wales, from Welsh-speaking Wales.
Okay.
For whom there's, you know, a strong kind of Republican culture, nationalist culture, etc., etc. And so to take games to Wrexham, I think, is actually a recognition of their, you know, they're part of the fabric, the DNA of the fan base.
Yeah.
It's also a great little stadium, but little being the operative word in comparison to here and the other grounds in South Wales. And clearly wouldn't take a Spain game there. But and I think it's about maybe 10, 11 years without checking since we last played there at all. And that was against teams like New Zealand, Canada, Liechtenstein. Those were the last three games we had there. So I think it is hard to generate an atmosphere there. There was a statistic, and I'm not sure if it's still the case now, but there was a statistic for a long, long time that we never won a game at the Millennium after going behind. And you saw that tonight. And the number of games, so the last time we played there was England, early goal scored. It's really hard to turn that around because the fans, you mentioned it, the noise just sort of dissipates. And it's
even with the roof shut.
Yeah, I think, because what happens is it disperses the singing.
Yeah.
So in the Canton end at Cardiff City is where a lot of the singing happens.
Yes.
They set the tempo, they set the tone, they get the song started. And then that kind of, you know, ripples out, you know, as it happens in a lot of grounds.
But it's part of that, what's happening at the Millennium, say this evening, is part of that, the feeling of a association with a less successful era, a much less successful era. Because it's funny, I was talking about that Czech Republic game.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, I had to double check that it was a qualifier. It was a qualifier, but it didn't feel like a qualifier for Wales because they were so far off qualifying, it might as well not have been.
Which happened a lot, yeah. I mean, Tamir didn't help with that as well. It was towards the end of the season. But I think it's a rugby ground. I think that is a factor. I mean, you know, rugby versus football debates in Wales leave me completely cold, to be honest. But it is a factor.
Yeah.
You know, you walk out that stadium and it's, you know, everything you saw is around a lot of rugby motifs and slogans and faces and advertising.
The RFU shop right next to it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
WRU. an RFU shop would not do very good business. So I think, you know, that is inescapable. To be fair to the FAW, and, you know, there used to be a basket case, but, you know, they knock spots off most other associations, certainly amongst the home nations or the British Isles. They've worked hard to ensure that those people who usually have tickets in the canton, and we have things like tournament tickets now, where you buy your tickets for a campaign in advance, all your home games, and you have the same seat.
Like a mini season ticket. I suppose that fosters something with the people around you. I mean, you go with the same people, don't you?
Pretty much, yeah.
But, I mean, part of football, wherever you go, and part of the club game, especially post-Taylor report, is the fact that, you know, you do end up sitting next to the same people. Now, in the old days, if you're on terraces, if people annoyed you a bit, you could move.
You moved,
And that's no problem. On one hand, you're kind of stuck with people in a season ticket seat. But on the other hand, you build these friendships with people. Mm. You may not know their names, what their jobs are, where they live, but you become quite close with them.
You do. And to be fair to FAW, when on the occasions they've taken games here to the Millennium, They've worked hard to try to give people the same sort of allocations. Mm. But at the end of the day, it's a different ground. It's a bigger ground. The stands are bigger, different numbers of seats, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm sure it's a nightmare to have to kind of administrate all of that for the FAW. But they've done well there. And they've tried things with, you know, there was a few more horns in there tonight and stuff like that. The Barry Horns as the band are great as well. I'm not aware that they were there tonight. If they were, I couldn't hear them. Sorry, Fez and the rest of you. So all of that has fostered a sense of belonging and attachment to the team, and I think what that ground does, it sort of dissipates it a bit, because you get a lot more tourists, you get a lot more children, uninitiated people, the people who don't pick up the signals and the signs for certain songs, they don't know the significance of cheering in a certain minute, they don't know that the anthem gets sung at a certain minute more or less each game, things like that. But I don't want to knock them for coming, because everyone has a first game. Yeah. And, you know, my lad Morgan came tonight. He still hasn't seen Wales win, which is kind of how it usually is for most of us. And, you know, that's what the formative years are like. But, you know, there's still a wow factor to that stadium on an aesthetic level, just a visual kind of... It's still an impressive stadium.
Yeah, for sure.
But once the game starts, that it's hard to generate an atmosphere, and I could hear some songs coming from behind the goal that Wales were attacking in the second half, but not a huge amount, and that's a shame. But I can understand why the FAW have taken it. You know, you wouldn't have got 50,200 or whatever the crowd was in any other stadium in Wales. So on that basis, it's certainly justified the decision to switch it. But you know, if it's not for another 7 years to be played there, then that's fine by me. With all due respect to the ground, they worked hard as well. Stewarding was a problem in the old years as well when we were there as a designated home ground. So you had very few flags, and I think one of, again, come back to this kind of culture and part of the fabric and the identity of the team is that you have these flags that have got these tiny, tiny little villages, pit villages in the valleys, little North Wales towns and villages, and there's a certain kind of charm to that. That's part of it. In the same way that England has a lot of those. You don't see Chelsea and Man City flags. So, and that's part of the charm. Well, I want to see those flags, and it was very, very rare sometimes that you'd get those flags.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Aiden Adams-Fly, another substitution for Spain. Gadel Akai, leaving the field, number 15, Sergio Ramos, and his place, number 21, Mark Bartra. Aiden Adams-Fly, another substitution for Wales. Gadel Akai, leaving the field, number 6, Saul Niguez, and in his place, again, Rimoy Koke.
Koke was playing for Wales, eh?
So, how has the changing fortunes of Wales changed your feelings around the team? And especially, you know, I know you and your friends go away to various places pre and post Euro 2016. What has that done for the feeling of following the national team?
There was a lot of lean years, and you know, it was all in hope rather than expectation. You know, we'd convinced ourselves that we were never going to qualify for anything,
yeah.
And that was kind of fine, you know, because the trips are still good fun.
Yeah.
You know, if you live in, you know, Pwllheli or somewhere in northwest Wales, you know, it's a 5-hour drive down now today. You know, it's a 5-hour drive back. I got mates now leaving, setting off for Wrexham, and that's 3 hours now tonight. So they're getting home at, you know, 1-2 o'clock in the morning. They're taking days off. So, you know, if the kids from North Wales have gone down, they've had to be taken out of school for today and all that kind of stuff. They're almost like away games within you know, as home games and all of that. And that was always really, really strong. And there was a hardcore element to that. And notwithstanding some of the inter-club rivalry issues that we'd had, but that hardcore is still there now. It was always there. And it's still quite... it's still prominent within that kind of sort of fan culture that's developed. But what you've got now, you've got stuff around fashion with Spirit 58, you've got the Barry Horns, you've got the podcasts. You know, we were pretty much the first, we're the first one about the national team.
Yeah.
There were podcasts about football in Wales, about club stuff. We don't touch club stuff. It's just the national team for us. Others have come along. You've got ex-pros doing their thing now as well. So all of this has created a real kind of vibe, which is great, which that fills the gaps between the international fixtures.
So how much of the difference between how people feel about Wales as a national team and the Welsh club scene, how much is that to do with the fact that a couple of the most prominent clubs in Wales are integrated into the English system, whereas the national team is totally separate, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think actually, you know, we talk about, you know, independent football nation, and we're very anti-Team GB by and large. There was an anti-Team GB banner there I saw behind one of the goals. I think there's always been a strong identity that these are Welsh clubs going into England for all of their away games, and there's a bit of that representing sort of Wales. But at the end of the day, it's still a club thing, and it is quite distinct then from a Wales fan culture. And I think there is more of a Wales fan culture rather than a Cardiff City or Wrexham fan supporting Wales subcultures. And it's kind of come out from the underground now. We've done blogs and podcasts about this, where it felt like quite a fringe thing, where you would get ridiculed for showing an interest in Wales games. But then, to be fair, when Bobby Gould was your manager, you were fair game, I suppose.
Great eyebrows, though.
Yeah. Not a great kit designer. and I still think Marjorie was the brains behind it all. In terms of the national team, what you've got is a very strong kind of aesthetic and a brand that is. And I'm not a marketing person, so I'm not necessarily comfortable with these terms. But people, you know, it's about bucket hats. There's a big badge culture. So it's got the fashion stuff, as I said, with Spirit 58.
Yeah.
And I think what Euro 2016 did was give everybody a crest of a wave to ride on. And I think what would have been really fascinating was if we'd have qualified for the World Cup, does that go up another level or two? Because you've certainly got that global profile. We didn't, so it's academic. But I think in terms of the, you know, we haven't kind of dropped back three or four rungs and we've settled back there. It's kind of stayed up there now where crowds are bigger. That aesthetic is really strong. People are buying into it. People are making a living off of it as well, which I think is important. Generating their own media, like ourselves, like other podcasts. And that's beginning to filter down into the club game domestically in Wales. It's also beginning, I think, to go then into the women's game. So when, you know, they sold out Rodney Parade to play England, you know, the other day, the end of August, that's unheard of. You know, that's just never happened.
And I think if you look at Jess Fishlock going over to Lyon, the fact that a Welsh player is wanted by, well, the best club side in the world. I mean, you know, that's something that's pretty spectacular. But if we talk about the competition element of tonight, what I really felt my main take home from tonight was, is we can talk about the size of the stadium and the difficulty in getting the atmosphere up, but like when you get to that point in the second half where you've got all those substitutions and you feel like you're there basically for a training game. Of course, Jurgen Klopp said that thing about this is the Nations League is the most senseless competition. Personally, I couldn't agree with that less. And I think tonight was a very good example of that. The fact that the feeling that it can be, you know, you can have some interest at the beginning of a friendly game, but it will fizzle out at some point. Whereas the Nations League, you talked about like keeping that enthusiasm for Wales or for any national team on the boil. Do you feel as a fan that the Nations League is something that helps to do that?
Yeah, once we finally understood it, the format.
that's the journalist's fault, not explaining it properly.
I like it. I think it does put a little bit more meaning into the fixtures. I think what is possibly an issue is that obviously, you know, in these small groups, you're playing two teams twice, and so we've got now got another game against Ireland and another game against Denmark for us from our point of view. But I think we were saying this on the last podcast we did, that this Spain game doesn't really matter. Tuesday's important.
Yeah.
So Tuesday's a lot more important than a champagne friendly, big glorious surroundings. Well, Spain felt top nation
as well. I mean, it's funny that the cover of AS today said it had a picture of the Spain players training on the pitch at the Millennium, and it said English lesson, which I'm not sure would make a lot of Welsh fans feel that happy. But the idea was that they would play someone with a British style specifically to prepare for that game.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure we're necessarily a traditional British side anymore. I mean, go and play Northern Ireland or Scotland for that. But, you know, you saw players who were trying to play out from the back to be more comfortable on the ball.
Yeah.
Ball is wide, goal for Spain. Give it to Pep, number 15, Sergio.
All back to Cardiff City next month, right?
Yeah. So we're out in Ireland at another rather ground in the Aviva. we've got Albania away, Denmark at home. So, yeah, I mean, it'll be rocking at the Cardiff City because that's kind of how it is now. That's the default. And it is, you know, Swansea fans, Wrexham fans, non-aligned Wales fans, you barely hear a dissenting voice that doesn't think that Cardiff City is now the home ground, irrespective of what your club allegiance is, irrespective of how far you've got to travel. There's no real countenance of going anywhere else, certainly not here. I think the interesting debate would be, you know, can we get the racecourse up to a level that allows us to take games there, the odd friendly? So and we've got Albania away, but for argument's sake Albania at home,
sure, that
feels
team.
Like a racecourse sort of fixture. But yeah, tournament tickets, you couldn't take competitive qualifiers there because, you know, I'm not sure you translate your tournament tickets, seat and entitlement to the race course away from Cardiff City. So it's a friendlier season. I'm not the, you know, voice piece for the fans as a whole, clearly, but I think you'd find a reasonable consensus around all games at Cardiff City with the odd friendly at Wrexham. Would suit a lot of people and give you a bit more of a day out for the fans in South Wales as well. And I know people who are, you know, big Welsh fans. They've never been to the racecourse. I think that's kind of sad, really.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces 3 thought-provoking questions over 3 glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.